All right, everybody, welcome to the FearShop.com Horror Podcast. I am Mike, and with me is Xavier.
Hello.
Always many words that he has for us. So thanks again for joining in. This is episode number 3. We are going to be reviewing... which ones are we? Oh, that's next episode ones I was looking at. I was like, that's weird. All right, so we're going to be reviewing a 2019 movie, The Curse of La Llorona, and also go back and do an older one in Candyman from 1992. So both of these movies were Xavier's pick. So these are the first ones he's picked from any episode yet. So see if he's regretting.
No. I picked bangers. I picked bangers.
Bangers. Okay. They're bangers, all right. We will see how banging they are. All right, so a couple things to get out of the way. You want to check us out on our website, it's fearshop.com. All the previous episodes will be up there. There's also links to our RSS feed, as well as where we host some of the podcasts. So we're on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, just in the midst of getting accepted into Apple Podcasts, validation passed, long plugin story on the website, and we've been fighting with it for a little bit, but just passed validation, so it should be live shortly. So you can check us out there. All the episodes are also going to be able to be played right through the website, through the player as well. We're also on a bunch of other podcast networks, but I think they're the biggies. So you want to get in touch with us, you can do it through voicemail, 215-798-0190. Email is podcast@fearshop.com, or just go to the website. There's a contact form in there for you to be able to leave feedback or do anything you want. As always, we love to hear the feedback. Think about subscribing to us on any of the networks that we talked about. Please leave a review and leave us a rating. That only helps us be found a little bit easier on the other thing. Plus, it gives us a good indication of how we're doing. So, we were just talking about this. We're probably going to do a mini review. I guess it would be more of one of me doing the mini review because Xavier hasn't seen the movie. From time to time, when you watch a lot of horror movies, you see some good ones, and then movies like The Drone. I don't remember if it was on a podcast or we were just talking about it in the car one day. Did we talk about this movie? It was like Amityville, something or other. I don't remember if it was on the podcast.
I don't think it was.
Yeah, I think it was we were just driving and we were talking about this movie, and I was like, it was just so bad. And of course, because it had the word Amity in it, I was like, oh, it must be some kind of sequel to Amityville Horror. I'm pretty sure it had nothing to do with it. I despised the movie so much that I didn't want to know anything about the movie, so I didn't even look it up to see anything. But the whole premise of that movie was they had like a semi-attractive woman. I think her name was Bougie. And they kept playing a song that was like, Bougie has a nice booty.
Oh, you did.
And I did. I told you about this. Yeah. I don't think it was on the show. But then the other day I was watching on the one night, and I was kind of sort of tweeting along the ways when I was watching it, just a few of the things, because so as you would expect, the movie is about a drone, right? The movie's called The Drone. I think it was 2019. It was a keeper. So it was a true dud. So I didn't bother looking to see who directed or who any of the people were that were in it. Actually, I think if I remember correctly, John Mayer was in this one in the beginning. The musician.
Yeah.
And somebody else, I think, in the beginning. I'm pretty sure it was this movie. And I'm like, wow, like... And the John Mayer one threw me for a loop because I was like, yeah, he looks really familiar. And then it took me a little bit to figure it out. And then, yeah, I checked the credits and it was him. I'm pretty sure it was this movie. So maybe I'm talking out of my butt, which would be bad. But anyways, so the movie was about... Think of Child's Play, right? Because it was this guy who was a killer, and he got caught by the cops. But instead of getting taken down by the cops, he channeled his whatever psyche or soul into a drone. Kind of like, you know, into the Chucky doll kind of thing. So there was this couple who, I think he was supposed to be a photographer, and I think she at one point said she was a photographer too, but he was some kind of amateur photographer or something. They moved into a really nice house, which they possibly couldn't afford if they both were kind of not doing so hotly.
They were successful photographers.
It's weird, because in the movie at one point they were saying like he was more of an amateur photographer. But
he was a successful amateur.
No. Oh. So basically he found a drone sitting on top of a trash can and decided, I'm going to claim it as my own. I'm going to go get a remote control for this thing and like own it, because my drone's 3 years old, so that makes it super old, right? So as the movie progresses a little bit, and I don't really care. I would expect nobody's going to care to watch this movie, so I might spoil things a little. Basically, there was a couple things that happened in the movie. So basically, his girlfriend or wife, I don't even remember what they were.
Wife,
okay. She was basically, let's just say, scared of technology, because her ex-boyfriend had once given her a birthday gift of a remote control car that went out of control when she was driving it. And in the way of a family that was driving, and that caused a crash which killed everybody in the family.
Jesus Christ.
So she was basically afraid of technology. She had like PTSD, right? And she just couldn't deal with the technology thing. So eventually she had left her boyfriend for a few reasons. I think one of which, he was like a psycho. The big reveal in the story is he's the one who ends up being the guy that's in the drone. So it was an example of really bad writing. It's just like, yeah, I don't even want to use a phone because I once had a remote control car and it killed a family. So I was just like, wow, that's just like, I think I tweeted something along the lines with, I don't know how Spielberg hasn't picked up this story idea yet. But yeah, there was nothing really redeeming about the movie in a ways. There's zero gore. Acting was horrible. If you're a John Mayer fan and you want to see him in a movie, maybe you want to watch that or something. But it was a really lame movie.
It seems like that's a popular opinion.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm guessing if you're on IMDb, I'm going to say
4.1.
Wow, that's...
that's high.
That is 2 more stars than it deserves. I will say that much. That is... wow.
Somebody gave it a 6.
Yeah, that's called the director rating their own movie.
Alright. Doesn't he give it a 10, gives it a 6.
Yeah, a lot of times on IMDb, they'll have... the first reviews are always like 10s. It's like, oh, this is the greatest piece of cinematography ever filmed. Right? And like the username is something like, I am not the producer of the drone or something. Right? And it's so bad. And then people start leaving reviews, and then you let it soak in a little bit, and then reality sets in. And yeah, it's the averages start going down. But the reality is it probably has a dozen reviews.
341.
Wow. Yeah, wow. That's... wow. 341 people have seen that movie.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, no. It's just... I guess...
no, I kind of want to watch it.
Yeah, okay, you can be 342. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't review it, so... I mean, they're... next thing you know, it's... watch. It'll, like, win an award or something next year, and I'll look like a fool. But it was... so, okay, all the crapping I'm doing on the movie, realized that I actually did watch it from beginning to end.
All 82 minutes?
Yeah, so... there's certain, I don't think you know this company called Troma, that they basically create movies that are what people like to say, they're so bad that they're good. I've never been a fan of movies that are intentionally bad, that they're so campy that you find them good.
Like Tales from the Hood?
The who? What?
Tales from the Hood.
I never hated Tales. Well, the newer one was a little sketchy.
I like it.
But the original one was like, wasn't horrible.
It was good. It just seems like they were trying to make it bad. Oh, that's besides the point. I don't know. Besides the point.
But it was very interesting.
What's your rating on the drone?
Oh, God, that's a two. It's just, yeah. There's very few movies in the history of all movies I've ever reviewed on any podcast or any blog or anything of that nature that I have given less than a two. There was a couple movies that we used to do in the old version of the podcast that, I mean, I could have went one or two on maybe already in the past. Somewhere I have some spreadsheet of all that, but there's some movies out there that are bad. But since I made it through this one, I have to at least give it a two.
I'll also like to rate it a two.
You will rate it a two? Yeah. Okay. Have you not watched it?
Yeah, but the plot seems pretty poor.
Yeah, it just...
It just sounds so dumb. I don't know.
So my guess is there probably have been other movies of killer drones, but...
No way. It's just not a good idea. Just,
see, the thing, you haven't had a huge history of horror, so...
That's baloney.
There's been, let's say even like in the 80s, probably when movies were at their campiest, there was just like, you can't possibly, like I don't think you realize like how many zombie movies get released every year.
No, I know.
There's like dozens of zombie movies every year that get released.
But how many zombie movies are successful? And how many drone movies are successful?
One of the most successful movies recently was Zombieland.
Exactly. So people will continue to make zombie movies.
Oh, people will always continue to make zombie movies because it's a whole cult following.
But name one successful drone-killing movie. You can't.
Yeah, the sad part is I'm sure there have been other movies. But this wasn't just a drone movie. At the end, he becomes a morphed drone. He's like superpowered.
Like a transformer?
See, he goes to his brother and he convinces his brother that he's his brother. And his brother soups him up. So, yeah, he's more than just a drone. He becomes a super drone.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Can I change my rating to one star?
Yeah, you can't, unfortunately, because it's been written down somewhere by somebody, so it's unable to be changed.
Please erase it and change it to one.
Yeah, there's... And let me tell you, I left a lot out. I mean, okay, so another example of, like, what the hell just happened... So he was accused of the murder of his neighbor because the drone took pictures of his neighbor while she was sunbathing and put a folder onto his wife's computer of pictures of the neighbor entitled Naughty Neighbor. So she, of course, thinks it's him taking pictures of the neighbor and putting it on her desktop of her computer for some reason. And the drone kills the neighbor. So the police were like, yeah, we need to talk to you because... I forget what happened. Maybe he left a note or something. Did he killed her? And so they went to arrest him. And then he got out, right? Because, you know, they always release murderers to come back for trial later.
Yeah.
And they hire a private investigator and explain to the private investigator that we're pretty sure it's the drone that took the pictures by itself and planted them on a computer and killed her.
They just guessed it.
Yeah, his wife early on realized the drone was evil. It was...
That's just a normal thing.
It was just very weird. It's not like, yeah, we got this, you know, security system in the house that maybe that's flawed or something. She's like, no, it's that drone, man. I know it's following
us. It's because it's a race car.
Yeah. It's just she was so... It is very weird that she decided to go with another techie kind of guy. If she's... You know, like I said, I had PTSD of technology. It was weird. You'd think that she would just, like, I don't know, go to Alaska, find an old man in a cave, and marry him or something. But no, she decides to go to another guy who's addicted to technology. And you know, he doesn't care that she's scarred for life. So he gets, you know, all the cutting-edge security systems, and it was just very weird. But, so... It goes from the detective rightfully questioning their sanity when they're telling him the story to, I don't know, 2.5 seconds later saying, okay, I'll take the case. And it takes him probably another 5 seconds to catch on that, yeah, I think the drone is a killer drone.
He's a smart detective.
Yeah, so it was just, it was so weird. I think we spent more time talking about this movie than we did on one of the ones from last week.
I think on both of them.
Yeah, last week was a shorter episode.
This is not a mini review.
Yeah, it was. But I don't know. You think we're ready to get into La Llorona?
Yeah. Si.
Oh, using that Spanish that you'll never use again.
Tristan, I'm very sorry about your loss.
It's your fault!
I can't even imagine how you must feel.
Your children,
Rinsing,
are safe now. But have they heard her crying? Have they felt the sting of her tears? They will. And she will come for them. Who? La Llorona.
All right. The Curse of La Llorona. Ignoring the eerie warning of a troubled mother suspected of child endangerment, a social worker... A social worker and her own small kids are soon drawn into a frightening supernatural realm. So, what say you on this movie?
What is it?
What do you think?
Oh, I liked it. I just watched it. So, I don't have a lot of time to like just think it through, you know? But I liked it. It was eerie, like I said. Are you saying no? It's not?
No, I'm listening.
Oh, I just made a... All right. I thought it was eerie. It was spooky. The kill scenes weren't that good. There weren't any, but... I don't know. Yeah. I liked it overall. It was kind of more... It wasn't like a slasher, like I prefer, but... Kind of like a... What was it? Exorcist? Conjuring vibe?
Well, it is Conjuring.
Is it? That's why Annabelle was in it?
Yeah. So this is, so if I let me tell you, I'm struggling with a lot of the Conjuring stuff. So I really like the Conjuring movies. I thought they were good. I think the next one's next year. And I think maybe the first Annabelle was okay, but then it all just started to blend in, and then there was the Nun. So I think this is actually a spin-off of a spin-off. So Annabelle was a spin-off of The Conjuring, and then this is like a spin-off of Annabelle, I believe.
You believe, or like you're guessing, like you think?
The weird part, like I said about Annabelle, it's like I watch the movies, and I'm like, okay, not horrible, not amazing. So I lose track of some of that stuff. Well, I guess technically The Nun might have been a spinoff of Annabelle, too. I know way too many stupid facts about horror movies. And for some reason, on all of this whole universe, or whatever you want to call it, I get perplexed because there's a lot going on. It is completely tied to The Conjuring and Annabelle.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, once you see Annabelle in the movie, I mean, it was only a few seconds or something, yeah. I think.
But I thought it was just a reference.
Oh, yeah, no, it is. And actually, the director of this movie, if I remember correctly, is going to direct the next Conjuring movie.
That's fire.
The Devil Made Me Do It, I think they want to call it.
The what?
I think the next Conjuring movie is called The Devil Made Me Do It. I don't remember if they said it was coming out in summer or coming out in the fall, like around Halloween time. But so the interesting thing, I've heard the legend before of La Llorona, and which is actually cool. It seems kind of cool. Basically, it's like the Weeping Woman, right? So the whole thing is, it's like in all of Latin America, there's this woman who, she was indigenous. Of indigenous descent. She married a Spanish man. They had kids, I think multiple kids with him. And then after having the kids, he decided to leave her because, you know, she wasn't whatever his race, his creed or whatever. And he decided to marry on to some like high society woman or something like that. And then in a rage, the Weeping Woman decides to kill her kids by drowning them in a river. And then without having the ability to cope with what she's did, what she's done, she took her own life. And that's why it's like that, you know, the legend is like she walks the streets of Mexico grieving for his kids' deaths. And that's like why when in one of the scenes you see the weeping woman that's sitting there. So basically, I don't know what it is. Like, she cries because she's thinking about, like, her kids' deaths. And then she just, like, goes psycho. And that's, like, when in one of the scenes you see. And it's, like, this movie, these kinds of movies, all of them just are just one jump scare to another. The one thing I will say about this is I've always kind of, like, I've heard this legend. And I don't know if I've heard of a legend similar to it. Or if it actually was. I think this legend of the Weeping Woman has been around for centuries.
I think I've heard it too.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know if they've kind of changed it or what. In a movie we'll talk about after this, in Candyman, they kind of had a legend that was around and changed it. But I think this one is the actual legend of it. So that part was kind of cool. Trying to think what other things that I did like about the movie. Oh, the Linda Cardellini or whatever her name is. She is Hawkeye's wife from the Avengers films. Mm-hmm. So she's been around.
Is she the main character?
Yeah, she's the mom.
All right.
The mom of the kids that they're now chasing. She's in that. I think she was in Strangeland. That's a movie we got to review at some point. Strangeland was like early 90s or something. It was the lead singer from Twisted Sister, which that means nothing to you.
Nope.
Actually, we were watching. I don't know if you were here. We were watching the Twisted Christmas on TV the one day. Guys dressed in drag that were singing heavy metal Christmas songs.
I think I saw it and left the room.
Oh, yeah. So the lead singer is Dee Snider. He decided to make a horror movie that he's been talking about making a sequel for 30 years. But anyways, the she was in this. So they had like some people in this movie. And of course, James Wan, who's, you know, he's been a part of all these movies. So he was, I guess, originally known for Saw.
No, but like, who in the movie?
No, he wasn't. He was the producer. Oh. One of the 300 producers in the movie. So James Wan has been the producer for all of these in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how hands-on he is with the stuff, but he was in all of them. So he was originally from Saw, and then The Conjuring, and Insidious, whichever one was first. And then all the spinoffs, he's all had a hand in all those things. People love him. He was an amazing director and like a real true visionary in film. But, and one thing I should mention, there's another movie out there called The Haunting of La Llorona. They came out the same year. They are completely different movies. The Haunting of La Llorona is there's been companies historically that have always completely copied other movies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's low budget trash. And yeah, that's low budget trash. That one. This one is tolerable. It's a pretty interesting movie. I mean, I think, you know, the film opens really well. There's a couple good parts, a couple decent scares. The writing is horrible.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's what kills me in this. I think they went with unproven writers. And just a lot of the story writing, a lot of the dialogue was just tough to stomach.
Really?
Yeah. For me.
I like the dialogue. Especially at the end with the Raphael.
Raphael, that's not even...
The priest? Guy.
Okay, yeah.
He was pretty funny.
Yeah, see, it makes... So I've seen this movie 2 or 3 times now.
Yeah.
And I barely remembered Raphael was the priest. That's like... I think that's why I have it in my head that I struggle with these movies. Yeah. I don't know why. But the Conjuring movies.
Fire.
Yeah. Dig those for some reason.
But you don't dig this one?
To me, it's straight down the middle average.
Really?
Yeah. I think I have some mind block. And this is interesting because this is where your perspective comes in. It's way different than mine. So I am probably overly critical of newer films. Like, I'll watch this movie, it's derivative, story writing is bad. And then I'll watch... I've always gotten a lot of crap from people because I love Blair Witch 2, which you've never seen. So...
Is the one where the people dance around the fire?
Yeah, you've seen it?
No, but you told me it's...
Oh, okay.
You said you didn't like it. You said it was the worst movie ever.
No, I didn't. No, I love it, actually. Oh, it's a bad movie, but I like it.
Oh, then you
said... I watch it so many times.
You said that everybody else thinks it's the worst
movie. Oh, everybody else is like... They will put that down as the worst sequel of all time. I mean, I think of bad sequels, I think of, like, Exorcist 2. Blair Witch 2 is nowhere near Blair Witch, but it was never meant to be. It was meant to kind of be in its own kind of thing. And a funny thing is, at least one of the people in the Blair Witch 2 became like a really famous actor that has done a ton of TV, including in this one show called Burn Notice, and I think it was running for over 10 years. And I think he's actually been like an award-winning actor. And he was awesome in that movie. But I just think it was a fun movie. Like, I'll watch movies like that and just be much more lenient on that. But then I'll watch this, and it's just... I don't know if it's me starting to be, like, a stodgy old man or something.
You're an old head.
I'm wondering. I could be an old head, and you young heads are now seeing these movies, and it's all fresh to you. Yeah. That's the thing. It's not fresh to me anymore.
I don't think it was that fresh. It was like... I don't know. Like, every jump scare, I saw coming, pretty much.
Yeah, but you're good with that. You're really good at picking out what's going to happen.
I've seen so many horror movies.
You've seen a bunch. I mean, you know, you've seen, I would say, a fair amount of horror movies.
More than the average person.
And some of the ones, like, you know, when I was having you watch horror movies when you were younger, I was picking and choosing which ones to watch because there's things I never wanted you to see in horror movies. So I always avoided anything that had, like, I think pretty much anything that had any kind of nudity or drug usage or just really, like, sketchy themes. Mm-hmm. And I'm still tentative on picking some of those movies now that even that you're older. But it just feels weird to me to do that. Like, one such thing I'm thinking of recently was From Hell. I think I talked to you about this before. So that is the third movie from... it was the ending of the trilogy that started with House of a Thousand Corpses from Rob Zombie. So we had talked about this a little bit. And From Hell was the most recent one. I could do a mini review on that movie too. But what I will say about From Hell is... they really screwed up what could have been an amazing trilogy. And what actually was a really good two movies that ended perfectly. And they decided to shove another third movie into the mix.
Just don't watch the third one. And you're good.
Well, I've never been of the mindset. A lot of people say silly things like when Rob Zombie's Halloween reboot or remake, whatever, had come out. A lot of people was like, that just ruined the original Halloween. And I'm like, but that's not possible. Right? It's just the original Halloween has not changed because he released a movie, whatever it was, 25 years later or something. Anything that happens there shouldn't impact what happened 25 years before that from a completely different director. He didn't touch that movie.
It's true.
But so it was interesting. All right. Anything else to say on this movie, or should we get into the ratings?
Anything else to say on this movie?
No. I didn't actually say too much more about it, but no. Okay.
You go first.
I'm right down the middle, 5.
5? That's not bad. I gave it like a 7.
Yeah. I mean, the way, and just for everybody listening, the way that we look at ratings is 5 is average, right? I mean, one's a, like...
The drone.
A horror show in a... No, drone's not even a one. the one is like horror show, not in a good way. It's just like a train wreck of a movie where there's nothing redeemable about it. 5 is an average movie. It is what we expected it to be.
Like if you saw on TV, you'd watch it again, but you wouldn't go out of your way to watch it.
Yeah, I'd say if this was on TV... without commercials, of course, I would watch it. Would I put a DVD in? Eh, no. That's, you know, to me, that's probably a 5.
All right.
This isn't like school where, like, a 70 is average, right? This is, you know, a 5 is average, and a 10 is just like...
the best movie ever.
Yeah, it's like, you know, The Godfather or something like that. So, I mean, we both rated it fairly well.
Yeah.
So you just rated it a little better, which I fully expected.
Yeah.
So I definitely, this is something more that would be up your alley, which is exactly what I expected.
I don't get scared by a lot of horror movies, but I feel like this one scared me a little bit more than the other one.
Why? Because it was a creepy woman.
That's why.
See?
I'm scared of women. But, there were just a couple, like, moments, but, like, I was expecting a jump scare, and it came, like, half a second later than I thought, and it got me, like, a little bit.
So what I will say about that is sometimes I wonder if that's the influence that James Wan brings, and probably not for this movie, but, like, he's a smart guy, and he knows that people are expecting a jump scare in a certain point in time, and, like, good directors, and in this case he wasn't directing, but let's just say good people in the horror movie industry know to keep you on your toes. Like, they're not always going to show you a jump scare when somebody enters a hallway, right? They'll try to do something a little bit different. Like, I guess back in the day you would think of a dream sequence and then something would happen and somebody would wake up. And eventually people started having a dream sequence inside of a dream sequence because that was different. So I think that's the one smart thing about movies like this is they're not just going to get you exactly when you expect it to. Because it will work most of the time, I think. I mean, the reality is with all horror movies, as much as us horror diehards want to think about it, we're not the ones that give the horror industry their money. The reality is the money that they make in the box office comes from the casual fans. That's precisely true. And people will debate me on that. But the reality is people aren't buying DVDs like they used to at all. There are still people that love to collect DVDs. I mean, I have DJ cases of DVDs, of things. Honestly, I don't even know where they are, or if they've been thrown away or what. As far as I know, there's one Blu-ray sitting in that bin over there. And that's, I don't remember why I wanted to keep that. I guess it was kind of a collector's edition. It was the My Bloody Valentine remake.
Is it the minor?
The what?
Like the minor?
The what?
Never mind.
Yeah, yes, yes, she's the minor. Yeah,
you gave that to me.
Yeah, I told you to watch it, but so there was two DVDs in there, right? I shouldn't say DVD, but there's two discs. One is the Blu-ray copy, and then one's 3D Blu-ray copy, and it has the glasses and everything.
Yeah.
I kind of kept that one. I think I kept a couple other ones. I have like this Terminator box set that came in some special metal tin, but for the most part, I threw away all the cases. And I just shoved things into this DVD. I think I have two DVD cases of horror movies that are sitting somewhere, I hope. And I have like three. And when I say DVD, like these DJ cases, I think they hold 1,000 each.
And they're full.
They're full.
Jesus Christ.
I think I have two of horror movies and then three. I used to collect bootleg music concerts. So back in the day, there was a whole big trading scene. And we would trade, I guess back then it was either cassettes or VHS tapes. If I had like a new concert from whatever, like say Black Sabbath or something, and then somebody had one from Ozzy, I guess to stay in the same realm, like I could trade my show for, they would trade me back their show. We'd mail them at the same time and all that. And it was really cool, right? This is well before YouTube or any other video sharing site. Because right now I can go to YouTube and put in any band, any song with the word live in it and see 100,000 live performances of those things, which you couldn't before unless you went to the concert. You didn't even know what the set list was. There's actually a really cool site. I think it's setlist.fm. You can see a set list for practically any concert that's ever happened.
Really?
It's like a social network type of site where people go in and like, yeah, I was at this concert. Here was the set list. And it's like super cool because sometimes there's bands that I've listened to for, I mean, 30, 40 years. I think Judas Priest is celebrating their 50th anniversary next year. This year, maybe? Yeah, I guess this year. We're in 2020. But like, I mean, it, to me, that stuff is like, that wasn't around. If you wanted to do a set list, you had to like, I mean, it was weird. I had this trading site, which is like one of the biggest trading sites that was out there back then. And there was like set lists, reviews at a concert, screenshots. So people could say, yeah, that looks awesome. I want to trade with you. And it got to the point, the VHS thing sucked because that was so expensive to ship. When we got to like swapping DVDs, I was trading 20 concerts at a time. And that's actually, I think, there was a guy, I wish I remember his name. I don't remember his name at all, but he was from New York. And so I was, at that point, it was just like, you know, rock and metal shows. And he was big into horror movies. And I was into horror movies too, but like I knew the horror movies you could rent at the video store. But he had the imports, right? You couldn't, movies are so easily gotten now. But you could never get like the old, like Fulci movies or Argento movies that were uncut. Some of them you couldn't even get in the States. So he would trade from people overseas to get these movies. And I remember I put a website together for him. This is, I don't know, this had to have been 25 years ago. I put a website together for a trading site for him. He rewarded me with, I swear to you, a box that had, and this was all VHS. There must have been 50 VHS tapes in there. Concerts. Because he's like, what do you like? And I gave him some bands. And he's like, I know you're into horror. I just don't know what you have. And I was like, I don't have a lot of import stuff. And he was probably the one that kind of got me into like the foreign directors. Like Argento and Fulci. Which you would hate.
What's that?
Fulci's a little tougher.
He's like slow.
They're very, both of them are very artful directors, I would say. So you didn't see Suspiria, right? So there was a movie that came out last year, and it was called Suspiria, which was a remake of probably one of the most visually stunning movies ever made. Called Suspiria. It was Dario Argento had created this movie in the 70s. It was one of the best horror movies ever made. And it was one of the best looking horror movies ever made. It actually, he made a movie called Opera, which was actually probably even a better looking movie. But like, I would watch those movies because they just look good. Just, it was so weird. Just the attention to what they did with colors and to all kinds of scenes. A lot of things were very deliberate. Fulci had this fascination with eyes. So in so many movies, it was like these scenes where like an eye gets pierced, but it's not like somebody stabs their eye. It's like you see something moving in super slow-mo going into somebody's eye. And it's just like, it was just the attention he paid. They were both like gore hounds, right? These movies were a lot about the gore too. Fulci's very tough for people to stomach. The movies don't hold up well. Argento's early movies were still amazing to me. And then his, let's say, more recent films struggled. They were just boring, and it was a tough watch. One of these days, I'll have you watch some of them, but I just have a feeling that they could be ones for you. So there's a couple. There's one that's streaming, I think, I want to say on Amazon. That I'm like, hey, maybe I'll pick that one because I really liked that movie. And it actually ended up having an actress who became huge later. And it had Donald Pleasance in it, who is Loomis from Halloween.
Who's Loomis? Oh, Loomis was the police officer.
No, he was the psychiatrist.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, so. That's dope. Yeah, it was like an early movie with him, and then also an early movie with, oh my God, what is her name? Connolly, Jennifer Connolly. I mean, she was so young in that movie too. She ended up becoming a pretty popular actress and then just blew up. And then I don't think she does too many movies now, but she did she at one point she was just whatever she came out was like just huge movies, like kind of like Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio. Like they don't do too many movies, but when they do, they're like huge blockbusters.
You know about it.
Yeah. But all right, so that's La Llorona. Are we ready to move to the next one?
Have you ever heard of Candyman? And if you look in the mirror and you say his name 5 times.
In cities everywhere.
Candyman?
They whisper his name.
Right. Candyman.
It's just a story.
Candyman?
Candyman.
Just a ghost story.
Candyman.
All right, so we're going to talk about Candyman from 1992. The Candyman, a murderous soul with a hook for a hand, is accidentally summoned to reality by a skeptic grad student researching the monster's myth. So, what do you think about this one?
I love this movie. I think this is one of my... This might be my favorite movie, second favorite movie of all time. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's interesting.
Really? So, I found this movie. I was scrolling through Netflix, just trying to find any horror movie. And for some reason, I picked that one.
No, you talked to me about it. You said, is it good? And I was like, yeah, it's good.
I don't think so.
You did.
Did I?
Yeah, I remember. I mean, just make sure it's Candyman and not any of the sequels.
I could have swore I found it. But either way.
No, you did find it, but you're like, is this any good? I'm like, oh, yeah, you should watch that one. Because
the cover art looked so sick. On Netflix. Mm. So I watched it and I just loved it. Like I couldn't stop thinking about it for like days. It was so good.
Mm. Alright, so Candyman is an interesting movie. I think this is the second movie that we've reviewed. Oh yeah, The Exorcist 3. Second movie reviewed from the 90s. And the 90s, I think I'd said before that it was like cursed because everybody thinks of the 90s as Scream. It was the decade of Scream. So it was all like the teeny bopper movies, and the people starring in horror movies were like teen icons kind of people. Like Sarah Michelle Gellar. None of these people ring any bells to you. But like Freddie Prinze was in, I think, Urban Legend with her. And what's that other girl? Nobody could stand working with her. Jennifer Love Hewitt. And none of them actually were in Scream. Scream was like Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox. But none of them bad movies. But like movies like Candyman kind of just snuck in under the radar as movies. This is a damn good movie. Very surprising good movie. Now, what I will say is... The right is based on a book called The Forbidden by Clive Barker. So the Candyman legend was contrived by Clive Barker, and Clive Barker is known for a lot of stuff. Probably more notably was Hellraiser. Mm. So he was a very imaginative writer, amazing writer. Did some direction of movies, including like Hellraiser. This movie was directed by Bernard Rose. But this film had a bunch of people that were complete unknowns. So the Candyman, Tony Todd, if you ever looked at his IMDb profile, this guy's been in over 200 movies. Like, think about that. Like, he didn't start acting in the 90s, but that's like when he started like doing movies like this, I guess. And he's been in over 200 movies.
Good amount of movies.
And then when you look in his profile, he's apparently in 4 movies that are in post-production. So somehow he's like filming 4 movies at the same time, pretty much. One of which is the new Candyman.
There's a new one?
There's a new one coming out in 2020.
Oh my God.
Now, I don't think he's Candyman. I haven't found out too much information about it, but I don't think he's Candyman, but I think he does have a small bit in the movie.
That's lame.
So I don't know what they're going to do with it, if they're going to re-envision it and be like, he was Candyman, but somebody took his powers or something like that. But this movie, I think a lot of people, I think, initially avoided this movie because it just looked like another cheesy slasher that was coming out in the era of cheesy slashers. And it wasn't. It was far from a slasher movie. It was a very psychological movie. Now, the sequels to this movie were practically straight slashers. But there was just a lot of smart writing in this movie. The whole notion of, like, how the Candyman wants to lure Virginia Madsen in to be with her. And she, like, basically wants to ruin her boyfriend's life. Ruin her life. It, like, including things that he's, like, what happens with the boyfriend, like, framing her for murders and things of that nature.
They're so sick.
Yeah, and just, like, you didn't really see that kind of writing very often, I don't think. That's, when you watch this movie, it's just everything about it just screams, like, this is going to be cheesy as hell. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you think about it, the budget of this movie was small, right? Roughly like $6 million or something like that. It almost made $6 million in opening weekend, which was in the Halloween season of 1992. So that's horrible if you think about it. The gross in the U.S., IMDb says it's $26 million. So, sure, they made money on the movie. But to think that a movie of this caliber made $26 million is, like, crazy. Because I know it was, you know, 30 years ago, but there was a lot of movies making way more than $26 million at the time. So that's why it was, like, and I think a lot of it, too, had to do with a little bit of the setting of the movie. And like I was saying to you, there's a lot that you don't know about this movie. For one, like I'd mentioned, Tony Todd, who's the Candyman. This is probably the movie he's most well known for, but he's been in so many other movies. He's been in, I want to say, all the Final Destinations, if not all, most of them. He has very small roles in a lot of movies he does. Mm-hmm. He was in, I want to say, was he in all the Hatchet movies? I remember him being in the first and the second one, and I don't remember. I think he was in all of them. Like I said, he's going to be in the next Candyman as well. He was in the two Candyman sequels. He was in the Night of the Living Dead remake that a lot of people say is far better than the original Night of the Living Dead. And then it's just like, he just shows up in movies. It's just, it's crazy. He just, like, and from what I understand, he's like the coolest guy ever. But it's just like, he has this voice. He has this look about him. And he was, I couldn't imagine them picking a better guy for this movie.
That's true.
Just from, even if just the voice, but just the way he moves and everything. Just creepy as hell, man. It's...
He feels like Michael Myers without the mask. You know what I mean?
That was the one thing I think a lot of people used to complain about. It's like, dude, like, serial killers, these are all mask guys.
Yeah.
Right? Up until Freddy... The most of the guys in the popular, like, slasher movies were all masked people. And even if you watch the early Freddy movies, you barely even saw his face in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. But this one, his face is just out there in the open. And I guess in some ways at the time, it sort of bothered me in the way, like, Kylo Ren did in the Star Wars movies. Like, Kylo Ren looked awesome, right? And then he took off the mask. And you're like, wow, he's dorky. I was like, he's not scary. Yeah. He's just a dork.
But Todd is scary without the mask.
He's, I don't know if he's scary. He's interesting.
I guess.
And so the thing is, yeah, he probably is sort of scary because he's a giant.
He looks tall.
He is huge. That's how he got the role. He's 6'5 or so. But I mean, that's why he got the role, because he's a mammoth of a man. And it's just, you know, and I stand 6'2", and I kind of feel tall a lot of times. So he even, like, towering over me. So, and I don't know that you see it as much in this movie, but he's a big boy.
Yeah, he's 6'5".
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's, and then also Virginia Madsen, who was, shoot, I don't remember her name in this movie, but she was the lead.
Oh, the chick?
Yeah, she was, she's a huge actress. She's been in so much stuff. So it's, you know, this was one of her early ones. Her, it has to be her boyfriend. So Xander Berkeley, he was probably been in, he's a huge actor. Again, ton of credits to his name. He was in like the Walking Dead TV show. Think
didn't watch that one.
He used to be so good. I haven't watched Walking Dead in a couple years now, but
so in like season 20, dude.
Yeah, the early ones were so good. The comic books were unbelievably good, and then yeah, everything started to get crazy. So the I think he was in both Kick-Ass movies. He was in the 24 TV show, which I used to love. But like, so you got three people that like became, in my opinion, wildly successful. I don't think people would call Tony Todd wildly successful, but I mean, to me, any guy who's been in that many movies, I mean, like, he's, I think when I looked, it was like 260 some credits as an actor, and most of them were small roles. But there, you don't get 260 acting roles just for the sake of it because you're 6'5". You know, so it's yeah, the thing about this movie is, one thing that bothers me about the movie is the damn thing's almost 30 years old, which makes me feel so old. Because if you think about it, there's probably a lot of things you see in that movie like that don't exist. Answering machines, corded phones, smoking in restaurants. Like,
I know this exists.
It's, you know, it's so weird. To me, it's like, I guess you grew up in that era. Like, I still can tell you what, like, the answering machine looked like in my parents' house. You know, and it's like, you know, and we had rotary phones where you dial, and it was, you know, it was crazy. And just to see that stuff in movies, you're like, I think a lot of people these days looking at it is like, that's not real. They think Candyman's more real than, like, an answering machine. But, you know, no doubting Tony Todd's voice is, like, one of the most iconic voices in horror ever. This, you know, I think of like, you know, Christopher Lee, that people think of, people like him as well, who's like just like iconic. I think you have to put Tony Todd in those kinds of things too. Alright, so some of the things I was kind of telling you about that because of how a lot of attention to detail they paid in this movie. So Cabrini-Green, the projects that they showed in the movie, that's a real place. It was a real place.
I think you told me that before.
Yeah. Not only was it a real place, like, that's where they filmed it. In order to film there, they struck a deal with the local gangs. So, you know, the guys who were, like, pretty convincing gang members?
Yeah.
Oh, they were gang members.
Jesus.
They struck a deal with the gangs and said, you can be in our movie if we're allowed to film here. Just because they were fearing for the safety of people. And I think in one of the last days of filming, there was an incident where they said there was a sniper shot at one of the production vans.
Jesus.
And they're like, yeah, I think it's time to get out. But it's like, that's like,
that's dedication.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, sure, they could have staged another project to look like it, but they wanted like that authentic project. And I think people these days, they don't realize, like, Cabrini-Green was like, it was known. You didn't have to live there to know about it, because people were like, yeah, don't go there. Right? It's just like, if you want to live, just don't go there. But,
I don't know if it's spoiling, but like behind the mirror, that's real.
Yeah, they were in the apartments. All that kind of stuff was real. That, like, I mean, it's not a spoiler. Like, she lifts the medicine cabinet, you see like another place. It's just, I mean, now I think even in that time, the majority of the projects were uninhabited for whatever reason. But like that kind of stuff was, that's all legit. That it was like, and you think that, you know, people have lived, still do live like that, because that's what they have to do. Not that they're bad people, they've just not had all the greatest luck in the world. So, you know, they do that, and kind of like the mother of the kid that's in the movie, right? She was a good person. She's not a good actor. But, <Jesus Christ. laughs> let me tell you, the scene where Virginia Madsen wakes up, and I'm blanking on what her name was in the movie, but she wakes up, right? And then basically the mother's there, and then there's blood everywhere. Single-handedly one of the worst acting jobs I've ever seen in my life. I can't imagine that somebody directed this movie and it's like, whew, she nailed it.
Maybe, like, I don't know.
She's like,
maybe they're going for something goofy.
It was, there's a couple, I forget which one, it was one of the Saw movies where somebody was equally as bad. And every time I watch it, I'm like, that it's almost to the point that that's spoiling the movie for me to have to watch that. But it was just like, I can't imagine that somebody's filming it and they're just like, yeah, that fits.
Well, maybe they were too scared to retry.
Yeah, maybe they just wanted to get the hell out of Cabrini Green or something. But it was crazy. Another example of like the attention to detail, the bees. They raised bees themselves.
Oh my God.
For the movie.
Yeah.
Raised them to 12 weeks old. Because at 12 weeks, they looked like adults, but their stingers weren't strong enough to really hurt anybody. There was a clause in Tony Todd's contract that he got something, $10,000 or something, for every bee sting that he had to endure during the filming of the movie. And it was a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a couple dozen or something. So he did well.
He banged. I'll do that.
And there was a couple scenes with like, oh yeah. So I think this is real. I don't know if it was rumor or not. But so Virginia Madsen, apparently, in order to make some of the sequences, the dreamlike sequences, accurate, they literally were hypnotizing her. So that she looked like she was under his spell.
Yeah.
And eventually she asked for them to stop. Because she was just kept getting increasingly uncomfortable that like, yeah, I don't like this. Because, like, she was apparently filming scenes not herself.
And it's from the hip.
Yeah. So, like, some of the scenes, you look at her, like, man, she looks whacked.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, like, she was hypnotized. And apparently that's all, like, legit. And, like, she even says it today that, like, yeah, like, that was uncomfortable.
Jeez.
There was also a couple scenes where they didn't warn her that a jump scare was coming. There was one scene where she runs out of the apartment and runs away. So apparently, that was all real. They didn't warn her that something was coming. And she got scared and just ran. And it was all real.
Really?
And she was like pissed.
And that was in the movie?
Yeah, they had her run off and it's just like, because I remember seeing that, and I was like, I didn't think nothing of it. She's an actress, whatever. And then you start reading all of, like, the you know, the details of the movie, and they're like, yeah. It's like they were like torturing her. She was like apparently deathly afraid of bees, so they were like forcing her to be in scenes with the bees. But it was, you know, that, and then just a couple times where they're just like, yeah, let's not tell her about this one because we want the real reaction. For all I know, at the end of the movie, she could have been in a pile of trash that was on fire. And, like, she went in there, and all of a sudden, like, yeah, let's burn her and see if we can get a good reaction.
That's the way.
It was so weird. Probably another thing about the movie that's always interesting. This shows, I think, how well the movie flowed. You don't see Candyman for 45 minutes in the movie.
In the beginning?
And yeah.
Yeah.
It's 45 minutes in. Because, like, I'm watching it, right? And I'm like, yeah, I remember it was a while. And then you see Candyman in a parking lot. And I looked. And I was like, yeah, it's 45 minutes. Like, half the movie before you even see the guy. Which was kind of cool in a way. But also, like, 45 minutes blew by.
Yeah.
And you didn't even realize it. Mm-hmm. But there was, yeah, it's just, to me, it's like the story is so well written. The score in the movie was amazing. There's so much good about this movie. And to me, this is what the vast majority of theatrical movies like Curse of La Llorona are missing. It's just, it's more than jump scares. It's more than the kills. But it's all about the ambiance of the movie or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, but when it came out, it looked like it was going to be a straight slasher.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because, like, 2 and 3 kind of were. 2 and 3 was, like, I mean, so you watch Candyman and then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I can't wait to see Candyman 2. And you're like, well, that was a letdown.
I guess it's hard to live to expectations.
Well, it was so weird. Like, I think it was Candyman 2 that they decided that they would have, besides Tony Todd, like a swimsuit model be the main actress in the movie. And I'm not knocking swimsuit models, but you don't typically look at a swimsuit model and it's like, that's acting. So.
Well, I mean, if they pull what they did to the other chick and just scare her without telling
her. Yeah, but it was... I do remember Candyman 2 and 3 were... I don't even know if they were... I think they were stinkers. It's just like, when you hold them up against the original Candyman, you're like, ooh, that was a letdown. But I think they were just stinkers. I literally haven't seen them probably in a decade.
Well, I'm going to avoid them. I don't want to ruin my vision of Candyman.
Now, I will not avoid the next Candyman.
Oh, I'm watching it.
So, it's interesting. They're supposed to be calling it a spiritual sequel to the original Candyman, I think. So, they're doing a Halloween, just like shifting timelines.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so it's going to be cool. And I think people are going to get pissed off because I'm pretty sure Tony Todd is not going to be the Candyman.
Well, that's funny.
Let's just say Tony Todd has not aged immensely gracefully.
Maybe it'll make it more scary.
Tony Todd is... let's say larger than he was. So he has not aged very well. I can't imagine that he's going to be as scary as like a 400-pound man. You know, as he was as like this sort of glamorous looking guy, and it's just now he's, I mean, he's 30 years older. He's, you know, he's alive. I'll give him that.
Jesus Christ,
that's a plus.
It is a plus.
But it's, and I still watch movies and I see it now. He's been in a lot of stinkers, and sometimes I'll see that. And it's like, dude, why? You know, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to be in.
Money.
But so the reality is, from what I hear, he is in a lot of movies he knows that are going to be stinker because he loves horror and he loves supporting independent horror. So he tries to give movies a boost by using his name, which is, I think, is pretty awesome.
That's respect.
You know, he doesn't have to. He's been in some movies you're like, whew. To be honest, I think when Hatchet came out, he was in that movie trying to support independent horror, and everybody was like, that's going to be a mess.
But you watched it.
Oh,
so it worked.
So, okay. So there's an inch... No, I didn't watch Hatchet because of him, actually. Him being in it was a little bit of a surprise. So years ago, the director of Hatchet is called Adam Green. Years ago we had, Frank and I had a t-shirt shop, Fear Shop, right? And we sold metal and horror movie t-shirts. There was two guys that were directing a horror movie. Shit, I forget what it was called. I can't believe don't remember what it's called. I'll have to look it up at some point. So they were directing a horror movie and they're like, hey, like, we need a bunch of shirts because we're directing this movie and we need like horror shirts and metal shirts. And so they bought a bunch of stuff and then we ended up giving them a bunch of free swag. We're like, yeah, of course, man. It's horror movie directors. So now the other guy, I don't remember his name at all, but he was a co-director of this horror short that ended up being pretty good because they gave us a copy of the movie. Not only that, we were credited in the movie. Shortly after, Fangoria, which was like a major horror magazine, picked it up. And So Adam Green was sort of a co-director, but always seemed kind of behind the scenes of things. He was actually, him and both directors were in the movie. So that short ended up at least skyrocketing Adam Green's career. I don't know whatever happened too much with the other guy, but Adam Green just, between that, then he started doing these Halloween shorts that were kind of campy, but really good. And he was just a really good director and a really good storyteller. I know that we had even interviewed him a couple times back, and like we were like really friendly with him. I used to chat with him all the time through email and all back in the day. So when he brought out like any of his major releases, I was all over him because I was like, this guy's awesome. So that's why I started to watch the Hatchet movies and was kind of surprised by Tony Todd. But I didn't watch it because of Tony Todd. So, interesting sidebar to all that, which has nothing to do with Candyman and barely anything to do with Tony Todd. But
it's interesting.
Sort of interesting, yeah. All right, so rating. I went first last time.
All right.
I still think you're going to be way higher.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 9.
Oh, you're not way higher. I thought at some point you said, yeah, this could be a 10.
It could be
a 10. But I'm an 8. I will admit I was between 8 and 9. I would say I used to watch this movie all the time. And then I rewatched it again for the first time in a few years. And I was like, man, this is not going to hold up. So I watch and I was like, yeah, you know, I keep forgetting how smart the movie was. That's like the word I always used about the movie. It was just like a smart movie. It was not Curse of La Llorona. It was everything about it was just like different than you expected it to be. Everything. And it just worked. So, well done to that movie. Could have been, no. Man, we've done 3 episodes now, and I struggle to remember movies. What did we do in the first episode besides Exorcist? Oh, Halloween.
Yeah.
I think we had both given that one an 8.
Yeah.
So 9 is the highest one we've given yet. Yes. No, but we have given other 8s. So Candyman, yeah, wow. It almost feels a little weird to rate Candyman and the new Halloween at the same.
Sound the same. 8 and 9 are very different.
No, I mean for me. Because I would say, and maybe, you know, I'm a sucker or whatever for the Halloween movies. All right, so let's close this episode out. You want to get in touch with us again, you can do it through voicemail, 215-798-0190. Emails, podcasts at fearshop.com, fearshop.com. Fearshop.com is also the website, so you can also check us out in, you know, like we said, Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher and Google Play.
Maybe Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts very soon, hopefully by the time this episode comes out. Definitely please subscribe, give us a rating, leave us some feedback. We always love to check it out, and any feedback you give, we'll make sure to read on the show as well. Xavier, you want to give us a parting words?
I do. Goodbye.
All right. He gives us the hello. He gives us the goodbye. So we definitely thank him for that. Our next episode is going to feature Ready or Not from 2019 and Pontypool from 2008. So that should make for an interesting episode. All right. Until the next episode, just keep it hard.
G. Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!